for the latest podcasts, the latest sports news, and for Toucher and Rich. Toucher and Rich. Download the 98.5 The Sports Hub app now.
Titans take over on downs from their 42. A handoff to Lewis. It's a reverse pass as he gave it up to Jennings, who threw it left-handed to Mariota, and he runs it across the 30. Oh. At the 40-yard line of the Patriots, tackled at the 38.
Wow.
As the Titans gave the Pats a taste of their own doing.
Vrabel rubbing it in.
The same play the Patriots ran with Tom Brady
on the
previous series.
It's a great call. And Vrabel taking it to him here. Getting out played, getting out coached.
Got everything today.
98.5, the sports hub. The softer of the two voices you just heard is Bob Soucy. He's brought to you by the New England Fat Loss Personal DNA Plate Strategy. When you know your plate, you maintain your weight. This is science, not sales. New England Fat Loss is New England's long-term solution for sustainable weight loss.
You know what sucks, too, is that this was the one game on the calendar that if you were a fan of the Patriots and you wanted to go to an away spot, Nashville's the one this year. This was the one that all around, I guarantee you, and Bob, am I wrong? This game out of all the five away games that you've had the most Patriots fans, correct?
Oh, yeah, without question. I mean, the streets of Nashville were crowded with Pats fans on Friday night.
Yeah, there's nothing cooler than to go into a city a couple days before the game just walking around with your jersey on. Just like, hey, what's up? I like the Patriots. That's the surest way of getting laid. I got to tell you. Wait a second. You like the Patriots. Yeah.
But that was the case, right? I mean, it was a ton of, like, they took over Broadway, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, when the Patriots came out of the tunnel before the game, you hear this large roar, and you looked around the stands, and you saw the Patriots jerseys in the stands. So people wore them from the streets of Nashville on Saturday night into the stadium on Sunday morning. And then Sunday afternoon, again, the loudest cheers and really the only cheers from Patriots fans were when the Pats came out of the locker room initially. Because from the opening kickoff on, there was nothing from New England to cheer about.
Okay, of all the failures that happened yesterday, and I don't think there's a lot of good things to say about yesterday's game, all three phases were awful. You know, players that you didn't think, like Gilmore, were going to be bad were awful, and Brady, we know what Brady did. Out of all the failures, which one concerns you the most going forward?
Wow, because they're all pretty alarming yesterday, honestly. You know, from the opening kickoff on, because I think we're seeing repeated breakdowns against special teams. They've had trouble adjusting, whether it's the new rule or not. You know, they spend a lot of money on special teams and invest a lot in that area in terms of attention to personnel and the emphasis that Bill Belichick places on it. And you go back to the game against Kansas City, gave up a long kickoff return. They had issues against Chicago, even though they made plays on special teams. And then, of course, yesterday they opened the game and allowed a long kickoff return. And then they were playing uphill all day long. The Titans established a clear field position advantage right from the start. Then you look at the defense, thinking they had turned the corner against Green Bay, and it was I can't point to any bright spots, frankly, in yesterday's game from that standpoint. But I think offensively, guys, it's concerning because you go back to when they – acquired Josh Gordon. They were an offense really struggling. You know, there were a lot of questions being asked, legitimately so, about the number of weapons at Brady's disposal. And I think even when the season began, we wondered about depth at certain areas, tight end, for example, running back on the offensive line. And what we're seeing now is that they've become stretched thinner. They've got some injury issues on that side of the ball. Dwayne Allen, with a knee problem yesterday, had to leave. With Hollister in and out of the lineup, and really not a true inline tight end. You know, Gronk has been out of the lineup for three of the last four games. And then you look at the receiver position and, you know, still struggling to get on the same page. And I know the Titans did a lot of great things defensively, but I think that's most concerning. As good as that defense is, you expect more than 10 points out of the Patriots and at least some semblance of rhythm, especially coming out in the third quarter after an opportunity to make adjustments, because you usually see them at some point in time mount a bit of a run, and they were never really able to do that in the second half.
Was the offensive line
Brady was terrible yesterday,
sorry.
And they replaced him with Hoyer, which is almost you never see. I don't know. Have you seen it while they were losing, pulling Brady that early? And if not, what does that mean?
You know, I'd have to go back and check the box score because it was Kansas City. And Zoe asked the same question yesterday in the air, and the first thought that came to my mind was the Monday night game in Kansas City.
Yeah, we're on to Cincinnati, that game.
Yeah, that game. You know, and I think what makes yesterday far more disappointing than the game in game against Kansas City is that was a September game, and there was a lot of experimentation. They were juggling guys in and out of the lineup. They were moving guys around on the offensive line going into that contest, and the Chiefs played great. And you still could kind of look back on it and say, okay, that was September Patriots football. But they had won six in a row going into yesterday's game. They're playing a team that, you know, despite a 500 record, they had to have a lot of respect for. They had met them in the playoffs the previous year. They certainly knew about the ex-Patriots and had the respect for Mike Vrabel and Dean Pease, defensive coordinator for the Titans. And then beyond that, Tennessee's a squad that had beaten Jacksonville the week after the Jaguars beat the Pats and beaten Philadelphia earlier in the year. So they had some quality wins, at least at the time that they recorded them. So I think that's what makes, you know, this game especially disappointing and surprising to me, going back to, you know, games of the past where they looked, you know, poor in every phase, and Kansas City would be one from 2014. And I think it was a combination of a couple of things, Fred. I think, you know, one was the way the game was going. Number two was the way the guys were going down. Edelman had left at that point. Allen was out. The offensive line couldn't protect Brady. You know, and what was the sense? They weren't coming back. Also, I wondered after Brady made the catch on that pass from Julian, he stumbled and obviously, you know, didn't get to the first down marker. And, you know, it was the awkwardness of Brady in and of itself. But I wondered, you know, did he tweak something there? You know, maybe they just want at this point, after resorting to that, and having to resort to that, let's get them out of there and let's just finish this out and get to the bye. That's a possibility.
How do you explain the discrepancy between the Patriots at home and the Patriots on the road? Because on the road, they've taken some really bad losses this year.
Yeah, John, especially for a team that really has prided itself on being consistent, you know, against anybody, anywhere. And they came into the season with a tremendous road record the last couple of years. Some of it's personnel related, matchup related, but I think, you know, you have to start to wonder about, and I hate to bring this up, but the mental toughness and, you know, consistency, effort, energy, because in the Detroit game, for example, you know, Dietrich Wise came out and really you could see him, and even he talked about it afterwards, energy and having energy. And yesterday there was none of that as a team. And they got a lot of guys. There's turnover every year in the NFL, and there's a lot of turnover on the Patriots. And somehow, some way, they're able to mix the formula. And usually, by this time of the year, annually, you know, they find the right combination, and you know, they produce the right results. But the inconsistency is concerning because it looks like, you know, should they advance in the playoffs, they're going to have to go on the road at this point, falling behind to Kansas City, and you have Pittsburgh entering the picture. And you know, in even saying that, I think it should be understood that, you know, playoff seedings really right now are the last things that we should be concerned about. And they got to get right coming out of the bye and start playing well after Thanksgiving, as they always look to do. But, you know, these next few weeks are going to be really telling for this team.
Do you think – I asked Troy Brown this earlier, but what do you think that Bill Belichick's opinion of Vrabel is after – if they were getting along before he did that Mariota play – where he basically mocked the Tom Brady play with the catch. Like, what do you think? Do you think that he took that personally, or that's just kind of like a tip to the cap, like, touche?
You know what? I mean,
it worked.
He might have taken exception with it. Maybe. I can't speak for him. I think.
Well, then,
you know,
screw him. Because that's exactly what he does all the time. And it worked.
Well, Fred, you know, let me go back, for example. I mean, there was a time in 2007 when Mike Vrabel was on the Patriots, and they were going on beat and rolling it up on everybody. So, yeah, I don't really have too much of an issue with, you know, what Mike Vrabel did there or what Deion Lewis said afterwards. You know, as Tom Brady, Tom Brady said earlier today, that that's the reality of winning. You get to say those things after you win.
See, I like Mike Vrabel. I think he's good for the game. I don't know if like I was a Tennessee fan, whether I would like all of his decisions, but the fact that he lost that one game by going for two instead of one, like, to me as an NFL fan, that's exciting as hell. I like somebody who's kind of, you know, takes those gambles. And yesterday, I liked the fact that they, and in the locker room, they mocked the Patriots. They kicked them while they were down. And to me, as a broadcaster, I welcome it.
You know, Rich, a couple of things. I think one of the things Mike Vrabel did, again, by playing aggressively against the Chargers, is that he told his guys that I believe in you. At least in that instance, we can make this play. And also, he was weighing the percentages. Are you more likely to get two there or drive the field in overtime and score against the Chargers defense? And that was kind of a calculated risk. But nonetheless, he's been aggressive all year. He did against Philadelphia in overtime. They went for the touchdown instead of a tying field goal, and they got it on fourth down to win that game. So I think from day one this year, he's coached kind of the way he played, with this aggressive style with a lot of confidence, and I think that's carried over to his team. And they were all in on that game plan from the very first snap for the Pats offensively when Kenny Vaccaro sent a message, I think, with that hit against James White. They were not going to give up any easy yards or any easy completions to Brady, and they certainly were not going to do what other teams have done. And that's, you know, allow James White to come out of the backfield and have a huge day against them. So I give Vrabel tremendous credit. And, you know, as far as, you know, the whether it's good for the game or not, or broadcasting, you know, I said after one of the last plays, you know, they were preening around and flexing their muscles and slapping hands and high-fiving. They earned that opportunity. And what was more concerning to me, honestly, and I don't want to sound too negative because the Patriots are still in a really good spot overall, but they manhandled the Pats, and they weren't just mocking them in the locker room. You know, there was kind of that strutting and swagger that we saw on the field, in a sense, was doing it on the field. And you heard Logan Ryan, and read what Logan Ryan said afterwards, that he's watched the Patriots play a lot of games, and he never saw them respond, or a lack of response like there was yesterday. So they got a bye week. They got to learn from it, got some soul searching, got to get healthy, and they got to come out, you know, ready to go. Because three of the next four, albeit starting with the Jets, three of the next four are on the road.
Well, if that game don't wake you up, I don't know what will. Well, I mean, if a loss like that doesn't get you motivated.
But you're headed into a buzzsaw over there in the Meadowlands.
All right. Bob Stosi has got a big podcast over there on the 98.5thesportshub.com. Will Brinson, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that was Will. You guys know Will's a great guest. You know, brought a lot of personality and great NFL insights and humor to the podcast.
He stuck up for you when we were busting your balls a little bit last week. I appreciate that.
That was you know, I was trying to give you guys equally a good natured hard time on social media as well. I appreciate the mention.
All right, what's the podcast called?
You mean you haven't heard the promos?
No, I've heard the promo. I don't digest every single. I'm working.
I hear them, but we're not listening.
Well, Felger was giving me a hard time the other day because he said, "What's the name of your podcast?" And I said, "The Gridiron and Beyond." And he said, "You know, they ought to promote it a little bit around here." And I appreciate that. I'm sorry you guys are inundated with all those promos during the course of the day. But yeah, it's The Gridiron and Beyond. We talked to Joe Cardona this past week on the Patriots long snapper and Navy reservist about Veterans Day and you know, some of what the Patriots have done the last couple of weeks. But we've had some pretty good guests, I would say. Ron Wolf, the Hall of Fame general manager, the former general manager of the Packers, was on the week of the Packers game. And as you mentioned, Will Brinson, by far our headline guest this year, as well.
All right, relax, ago. So you got it out there. All right, thanks, Bob. Talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Fred, thanks, guys.
All right, we appreciate it. Jesus, I mean, you don't have to go through the whole guest list.
He's very proud of that podcast.
I didn't say he shouldn't be, John. I just don't know why you had to say everyone that was on it. We will return.
It's T&R.
Heard you like to party.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I mean, that's not the way human beings act.
Follow these guys on Twitter at Tutcher and Rich.
Boy, did Twitter explode.
Oh, I don't want to be a player no more. And he's not. He's dead. Yada-da-da.
When's this movie coming out? It's been, like, planned for the longest time, the death of Biggie. And for a while,
no, this
it was...
is Big Punisher.
Oh, I thought it was Big Punisher. For some reason, I thought it was Biggie.
Wait, maybe you get your hip-hop facts straight before you open
to metal.
Your dumb mouth.
I was listening to metal at the time.
Before you open up your dumb mouth.
You listen to Big Pun. I was into Sepultura.
That's kick-ass. All right, Rich, you want to talk about the Saturday Night Live situation?
Yeah, so last week, you know, Pete Davidson, who is now known as the guy who used to date Ariana Grande or used to be engaged to him.
Who they kind of are forcing into sketches now, despite his ability to be in a sketch.
You see, I find him funny, and I found him in some sketches where he was kind of funny,
see,
too.
See, I think what he does in Weekend Update is funny.
Yeah, it's that's always good.
He's a stand-up.
Yeah, and his like interviews, he's funny. His stand-up's good. There was a couple sketches that I found him in that I was like, all right, he's kind of funny.
How do you consume SNL?
I usually watch it. Like okay. If it's on Saturday night, I'll watch it. Now,
see,
now
the
there's
AV
sometimes
Club the next day has all of it clips.
Yeah,
with no commercials. So that's how I consume
it. Yeah, usually like if it's a Saturday night, I'm like, oh yeah, it's 11:30, and I'll turn it on and I'll watch it.
And I skip Weekend Update because I don't find either of those guys remotely funny.
See, I think Weekend Update, it's all right. Now, listen, is it back in the day when Norm Macdonald used to do it? Hell no.
No one's as good as Norm Macdonald.
No one's as good as Norm Macdonald.
Nor will they be.
No, probably not. You'll never touch that type of sun. But Pete Davidson last week was doing a thing on Weekend Update where they were showing some of the candidates, people who are running for office, and they would just put a picture up there and he would comment on it. And one of the guys they put on there was Dan Crenshaw, who is a Navy veteran who was running for Congress. And he said he looks like a hitman in a porno movie. And then at one point he goes, I'm sorry. I know he lost his eye in war or whatever. And for that, he got like a ton of crap. I mean, this guy had served, I think it was like in his like third stint.
His third tour in Afghanistan.
Yeah, so he lost his eye, and obviously a bunch of people went crazy about that.
Not him, though.
What's that?
The guy who won.
No, Crenshaw did not. No.
He said that we should.
Well, hey, I have it here. So
you have this?
Yes,
I have. From Serrant Live?
Yes. Yeah.
No, he said before that. He said before that when he was elected, he said that they asked him about the Houston Channel asked him about it, and he said, like, I didn't think it was funny, but we live in a culture of outrage, and I don't think people should be fired for their jobs from their jobs. And I think we have bigger things to worry about. So I will give him a round of applause for saying
awesome.
That.
Awesome, awesome. Like, so, I mean, everyone's out to get everyone. Now that comment sucked, but I like that he said that.
He said Navy SEALs don't get offended or something like that. Navy SEALs don't get offended or something like that. And then he said, yeah, and then he said that we live in a culture of outrage, and I'm sick of everyone clamoring for people to get fired, and I'm not one of those people.
So there was a truly great moment on SNL this weekend. So Pete Davidson goes out there, and he, you know, it looks immediately like he's going to be doing an apology. And then Dan Crenshaw shows up and slides out right next to him, and here's how it went.
And what I'm sure was a huge shock for people who know me, I made a poor choice last week. I made a joke about Lieutenant Commander Dan Crenshaw, and on behalf of the show and myself, I apologize. From the bottom of my heart, it was a poor choice of words. The man is a war hero, and he deserves all the respect in the world. And if any good came of this, maybe it was that for one day, the left and the right finally came together to agree on something, that I'm a dick.
You think?
Commander Dan Crenshaw, everyone, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for making a Republican look good.
Look, I just wanted to say, for people that don't know, the reason you're wearing an eye patch right now is that you lost your eye to an IED in Afghanistan during your third combat tour. And I'm sorry.
Thank you, Pete. I appreciate you saying that.
So we good?
We're good. Apology accepted.
Just keep breathing.
It sounds like my phone's ringing.
You gonna answer that?
No, I was just gonna let it ring because that's rude to answer. Let's just let it go to voicemail.
No, it's cool. Ariana Grande. Well, I'm cool, man.
Yeah. But, oh, do you know her?
All right, so
his phone ringer goes off and it's Ariana Grande, which is kind of funny. And then they let Dan Crenshaw do the same thing that Pete Davidson did, where they took a picture of Pete Davidson and he ripped on him and did a bunch of jokes. But then at the end of it, it got serious and Dan Crenshaw said this.
There's a lot of lessons to learn here. Not just that the left and right can still agree on some things, but also this, Americans can forgive one another. We can remember what brings us together as a country and still see the good in each other. This is Veterans Day weekend, which means that it's a good time for every American to connect with a veteran. Maybe say thanks for your service, but I would actually encourage you to say something else. Tell a veteran, never forget. When you say never forget to a veteran, you are implying that, as an American, you are in it with them, not separated by some imaginary barrier between civilians and veterans, but connected together as grateful fellow Americans who will never forget the sacrifices made by veterans past and present, and never forget those we lost on 9/11, heroes like Pete's father. So I'll just say, Pete, never forget.
Never forget. And that is for both of us.
That was awesome. And for everyone involved, obviously, everyone walks away a winner in that. But the one main thing out of it, other than, of course, what he said about the veterans, is that I just love that he came out and said, why can't we just say, like, take an apology and move on? Everyone wants everyone fired. Hell, yeah. Some people have made careers out of it. Everyone wants everyone fired. And for somebody in the public light to come out and say, hey, man, how about we just can't we just forgive each other when there's an apology and someone seems sincere and we can just move on? I mean, it has become an industry of everyone taking tweets and trying to dig up old tweets and get people for things that they said here and there and there and there.
But then also what's ironic about that the very people that do that, when it comes back on them, cry foul.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. And I'm telling you, there are people who just they've made a name for themselves trying to get other people fired.
And
to that I say, listen, what comes around goes around. Nobody's safe. And that's the thing, is that if you just are one of those people who constantly does that, just look yourself in the mirror, because when you're in trouble, don't look around for people coming to help you. If you have done that to others and you're somebody who's constantly saying this guy needs to be fired, this guy needs his job, and you go out there, when you get in trouble, don't be surprised when there's crickets.
And don't be ask for everyone's sympathy, because why can you do it and other people can't? I mean, that's the hypocrisy, the definition of hypocrisy.
It was truly a great moment. It was an awesome moment. Well, and I hope that there's
moment,
more of that.
The better moment is the one I told you when you thought I was interrupting you and giving something away. I just want that on the record.
Okay.
No, I actually did see him after the Houston thing, and I was like, hey, this guy's... That's not what I expected.
Yeah, that's cool. It's surprising.
The first thing he said, he goes, it wasn't funny. And then I'm like, all right, here we go. Yeah. It's going to be one of these things. But then he said, no, I'm a Navy SEAL, something along the lines of Navy SEALs don't get offended or something like that. And then he said that we live in a culture of outrage and trying to get people fired, and that's not me. So I thought that, you know, there's a poor joke at his expense. And he looked at it and said, you know what? This I am who I am, and I'm proud of who I am. And this comic made a joke that is going to end up biting him in the ass anyway. And he said, well, let's not go crazy firing people. So there you go. I agree with you, Rich. I thought that was a nice sentiment coming from someone like that. All right, what do we got coming up in the stack?
All right, we're learning a lot more about the Patriots and their relationship with Malcolm Butler from this past weekend, something that we might not have known before. On top of that, it seems like the box office is being overtaken by Christmas movies, and the People's Choice Awards were yesterday. Who the hell knew that?
Who knew how award shows in general just drive me insane?
There's too many of them.
Well, just there's none of them are any good. Yeah. Like, hey, let's take these rich and famous people and get them all in a room and give them stuff. All right, here are the headlines.
Can mornings get any better?
Yeah. Could you please help me?
Toucher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. The stack is brought to you by Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare.
All right, okay, I need to know more about this. And Dan, are you aware? Okay, so Fred was just telling me, and I saw a little bit of the news a second ago, what's going on with the dorms at UMass Boston. Do you know about this?
I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm reading.
It was in the Globe. It was on the front page of the Globe.
Here we go. Okay. UMass Boston dorms, not yet a home away from home. It said, a freshman who moved into UMass Boston's first ever dormitory on Labor Day made history, helping to turn the campus into something more than a commuter school. But 2 months into the school year, the dorm, two gleaming structures by the waterfront on Columbia Point, is turning out to be more like the Tower of Tribulations than the Taj Mahal. In the first weeks of school, dorm elevators abruptly fell several floors with students inside. Water shot out of one toilet when you flushed another, students reported. The rooms are often stifling hot, but the showers are frigid. The hamburgers in the dining hall are sometimes raw.
Yeah.
It's safe to say that growing pains with the residence hall, students love giving their quarter of their class. Okay.
I'll take anything except for the elevators falling several floors.
Apparently, the walls are so thin you can't use tacks and nails to hang posters.
Wait, did you see the other one that said another student believes the poor quality of the water killed her pet goldfish?
Oh, jeez. All right. If you were one of the people stuck in these elevators, if you've ever been in an elevator that fell... 617-779-0985. Not stuck in an elevator. We've had that before. If you've ever been in an elevator that has fallen, I would like to hear from you. Man. Because you want to talk about the stuff of nightmares. And this is so just nothing.
You think you're going to die.
So you're saying nothing was done right, it sounds like? I mean, with all those. Now, why is the burgers not being cooked because a building problem? That's just somebody didn't cook it right, right?
No, because everything is screwed up there. Like, obviously, the dining hall is screwed up.
So the ovens aren't cooking at the temperature they're supposed to be cooking? Is
that's
that
what it sounds I would imagine. Like, yeah.
Okay, all right. This is pretty.
Oh, boy.
All right.
It's right there across the street.
Yep. Right across the street. I would, if you've ever fallen in an elevator, I would like to hear about that. 617-779-0985. Okay, so we're now learning a lot more about this Malcolm Butler stuff because, of course, he was the Patriots played the Titans this weekend. By the way, Malcolm Butler, of all of the people, all of the ex-players trashing the Patriots, whether it's Mike Vrabel or Deion Lewis, who went nuts, out of all the people trashing the Patriots, the one that you think would have the most reason to did not. As a matter of fact, Malcolm Butler was a good soldier yesterday. When he was asked about his time with the Patriots, he said he loved, you know, he thanked Bill Belichick for the opportunity. He loved his time with the Patriots. I mean, dude made him cry on national TV on the during the Super Bowl.
Also made him rich.
Yeah. I mean, well, I would argue that Malcolm Butler helped make himself rich.
I'll give you this example. If Mahomes is playing for Buffalo, is he Mahomes?
I mean,
No. He's
pretty good.
He's not playing.
No.
And so if Andy Reid, who's an offensive genius, gets Mahomes, he's able to use him correctly. Think of how many teams take players and they don't know how to use them correctly.
No, I see what you're saying. I mean, the fact that
Buffalo's been kind of a habit of it over the last decade and a half.
Okay, so according to Ian Rappaport, he said during the free agency period that immediately followed the Super Bowl, which we thought there was all sorts of tension between Bill Belichick and Butler, Butler apparently remained on the Patriots' radar. As a matter of fact, as he got set, he said it's worth noting that New England was interested in re-signing Butler at the right price, according to Ian Rappaport's sources.
Now, well, what price was that?
Free.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
I'm thinking for less than $2 million.
But the fact that they would even want him back, I thought that the relationship was horrible, that he was ruined, and that they benched him. So, okay.
Hold on. It's different if he's the number one guy, but if you've already signed Stephon Gilmore and say, okay, Malcolm, why don't you go play in the slot or against the second best receiver, that's a lot different.
All right, well,
look, you had Tylo on one side and Brandon Browner on the other. There's a reason Browner was able to play on this team, even though he was the worst defensive back in football after he left.
They said the Patriots informed Butler's agent, Derek Simpson, to reach out to them if he didn't get an offer to his liking. They're already paying Stephon Gilmore. The Pats perhaps could have paid Butler around $10 million a year.
I don't think that was going to happen under any circumstances. Either that or there were a lot of incentives involved. I honestly don't think they would have paid Gilmore what they paid him and then paid Malcolm Butler $10 million for a year. It was going to be for 1 year. It wasn't going to be a multi-year contract.
Or this is everyone trying to save face, and this is a story leaked by the Patriots to Ian Rappaport.
Yeah, there's no way the Patriots are going to pay big bucks for long periods of time.
I wouldn't think so either.
Not a chance.
But that's being important.
Gilmore was a strange situation.
We need to talk to Marie. Marie is on line one.
All right. Marie, go ahead.
Hi. Hi, I just wanted to let you know my daughter is a freshman in the nursing department at UMass Boston. She wanted to stay there, and she is on the 7th floor, and the elevator stopped at the 5th and dropped to the 1st.
Four floors.
Yes, and there were 3 girls in there with her, and it dropped to the 1st floor.
Did she hit her head?
Nope, they all just fell to the ground. Nobody got really hurt. They reported it, and after that, it was still happening, and she never took the elevator again. She is still taking the floors.
Right. And
taking the stairs.
Yeah, so that's another thing, is that these are not small buildings. These have many floors, and they'll shut down the elevators to work on them.
So you got to walk up to like the 12th floor to get to your room.
And you know what? Even after they said they were fixed, the kids were still too scared to take
them.
Oh, of course.
I would. I'd be frightened as hell.
So they still take the stairs with all their book bags and everything else. And let me tell you, I was amazed how expensive it is to live there. And now, you know, I heard all these problems. I'm so glad the Globe did an article about it because, and this morning we get a letter from the chancellor saying that everything will be fixed and security will be upgraded because kids were just sleeping all over the place. Kids who don't even live at the dorm.
That's what I heard. I heard that there was a problem with the key card thing and just people, random people were coming in and sleeping inside these dorms.
Apparently it's a private company that built these. And so when you pay, you're paying a private company.
I did not know that until we went to pay and they said, UMass said, oh no, you have to make your check out to some other company and send it to them privately. And I was thinking, that's so strange. I had another daughter graduate from college and never had to do that. And when my son went in, he walked right through the gate and right through. They never stopped anybody. But apparently starting yesterday, they have armed guards, that's what they wrote, at both dorms at the turnstile to make sure safety is their number one concern. Oh, so I just wanted to let you know, I was riding and I was listening to sports radio and I said, oh my God, that's our story. So
that's crazy.
Was my story.
Awesome. Yes. Well, thank you, Marie. I mean, that's, four floors. I mean, that's
safety. I don't care if it's one floor.
Safety is now their number one priority.
Yeah, now.
now it is. Now we're going to bring in the guys with guns. Yeah, now you guys are safe.
We had to kick the tires on this until November.
Jeez, man.
All right, Rich, one more story.
All right, well, a Massachusetts man won a $100,000 lottery prize in the last week's Mass Cash using the jersey numbers from his favorite Boston Red Sox players. That's right. Jim Aylward Jr. of Templeton told Mass State Lottery people that he picked his numbers just with the jerseys that he got from the key players in the Red Sox 2018 World Championship winning team. John, the numbers were, name the player.
J.D. Martinez.
No. I'll give you the number. You name the player. 11.
Jesus. I'm panicking. I don't know 11.
You're not a fan.
Jesus, what's wrong with
me? Raphael Devers.
Thank you.
Number 16.
I'm tapping out.
Oh,
16.
My goodness. Andrew Benintendi.
Thank you.
19.
19 is Jackie Bradley Jr.
Very good. 22.
22 is not J.D. Martinez. It's I'm so
late. You suck.
Mookie Betts.
No, Betts is 50.
Rick Porcello.
Porcello is 22. Betts.
And 25.
25 is J.D. Martinez.
Oh, come on. He's not. Right, everyone knows 25 is
Steve Pierce.
Is Steve Pierce. Yeah.
Your instant replay's on. I don't know why it's not firing.
That's weird.
Yeah.
All right. By the way, you know how I know that story is I had an appointment on a Thursday when that story broke, and the local news was on, the 12 o'clock news. You know what the 12 o'clock news is?
What's that?
Commercials. I had to sit there for 15 minutes like while something was being done. It was a quote-unquote massage place. But I had to sit there for 15 minutes while something was being done.
Yeah.
And I never watched local news, I'll be honest. And it's just like, hey, everybody, it's going to be warm. Back after this, and then there's like 17 commercials, and then they come back and they're like, hey, Patriots, Tennessee, back after this. It's like, how
nice.
You're ramming all these commercials. I want to know what's doing around town. I want to know that this guy won the lottery. That was one story that they took a whole break over.
Yep.
The one thing that they push commercials aside for is a good storm. Then they bring in the weather guy, and then it's 10 minutes on the storm and people standing out in the storm.
Does anyone care about anything going on local television except for the storm?
No.
Except for weather?
No. Weather, you push all the commercials aside, you push all the world's problems aside. If there's a storm, you lead it off with the news anchors looking serious, and then you bring in the weather person who's just happy as hell to be reporting on snow because it's really cool, and look at all the yellow dots, and it's 8 inches on the ground in Templeton, Massachusetts. And then you have guys that are standing out at rest stops measuring snow for you or riding hoverboards around in a rest area, and that's what it is.
This place is going to be a nightmare to get to in those storms.
Yep.
All right. We will be back. We'll find out what Zolak and Bertrand have on the way.